Yeah, so I think that the application of using AI to detect early signs and put people in categories of high risk that need additional monitoring is going to be instrumental in how we move forward. I think that what's difficult sometimes is when studies show that early detection didn't help outcomes. And so I'm very interested in hopefully seeing, what will AI make the most impact in when it comes to the types of cancers, right? There might be certain types of cancers where even if you detect it early, there isn't a mortality benefit. But with others, maybe a resection is possible enough to stop it from further spreading. So I think there needs to be a lot more research within that, but I think it's exciting that we could change the way that we monitor.
Yeah, so really what we're talking about goes back to the theme of our national meeting, which is going to be September 19th and 20th in McCormick Place, Chicago, which is we need evidence-based medicine to look at both early detection as well as treatment when we're using artificial intelligence. And so what's lacking in all of these FDA-approved algorithms are randomized trials. The only division within medicine that has like numerous randomized trials currently is gastroenterology. They have over 50 randomized trials with AI and early detection during colonoscopy, but we really need that type of data for patient care in the realm of oncology. So I like. Welcome to the podcast of the American College of Artificial Intelligence and Medicine. I'm Mel Spiceman, president of the college, and today's podcast is with Connor Yost, who is a physician that is a resident doctor and at Creighton University, their Phoenix, Arizona campus. And we're going to be talking today with Connor about the intersection of artificial intelligence and resident medical education, as well as artificial intelligence and oncology. Connor, welcome and thank you for being on the podcast. If you could give us a little backstory about how you got involved with artificial intelligence and medicine.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Mel, so much for inviting me to this. So a little bit of background on me. My story into medicine over the last couple of years has been a little bit different than other people. I am a first gen, and I wanted to be a doctor ever since I was a kid. When I was in college, I met my wife in organic chemistry, and she also wanted to go to medical school. And so we decided to kind of journey together on that. We ended up going to AT Still University back in 2020, where we attended mainly to try to stay in Arizona because we had also at the time had a little bit of a surprise getting pregnant. And so our family is three, and we've somehow made it through med school with a child while both being in med school. And now we are where we are today. She's an OBGYN resident. I'm an internal medicine resident, and we're still trying to juggle having a child in residency. Probably the biggest part of my aspect of my story within AI really starts with my business background. And so before med school, I was very much involved in sales companies. And then while I was in med school, I was still working. And when you have a kid, it's expensive. So we had to bring in some sort of income outside of just residency. And while I was working in medical school and ChatGPT started coming out, I really thought to myself, hey, how can I use this to help with my sales? How can I automate things so that my life is a little bit easier, so I can focus more on school and less on all of the jobs I have to work to be able to afford daycare and afford help so that we could go to rotations or be on overnights. And I really started kind of figuring out the applications of chatbots and responding to messages and texting customers. And I built an entire way to help manage a lot of the minutiae that is sales for myself. So that was really cool. That was a lot of fun. As med school progressed, when I started fourth year, we at AT still have a program called Residency Readiness. And I love medicine, I love medical education. And so one of the electives we had was we could be part of the residency readiness learning rotation, in which we would be part of the team that actually ran the entire program to get ready for residency. So when I joined this program, one of the biggest parts of the rotation was is you had to create a project that would be impactful within the program. So I thought kind of hard about what I could do, and I thought about, my communication skills, my understanding of how to just talk to people. And I think that communication is something that comes with lots of practice. Not everyone gets that practice in med school. And it can be a real hindrance when you start residency and you don't know how to communicate with a team. So I took what I had learned from sales and I crafted a nurse chatbot that would message medical students to allow them to practice talking with someone in a very safe environment in which they could explore how to review a chart and make decisions in real lifetime situations. So I created this project, I created a couple cases, and I showed it to my teacher, and she was ecstatic. And so we actually took it and we applied it to a bunch of the classmates, and it was a huge hit. It was awesome to be able to see people practice. And sometimes with some of the cases, we had students that wanted to redo it because they said, I messed up on this, I want to retry it. And it gave us an opportunity to have a discussion on, okay, how do we best help med students learn to communicate? The answer is more practice, more opportunities. And we don't get that in medical education, mainly because a lot of times we don't work night shifts. A lot of times it's a high stress environment, and the interns really need to take the initiative to do those. So I crafted this project, and after, graduating medical school, my teacher said, "Hey, we really should craft this into something more." And so we applied for some grants, and we actually got one that allowed us to create it for a residency readiness program. And ever since then, we've been building out the application. We just basically got our beta that would allow schools to create as many cases as they want and specialize those cases within whatever specialty they wanted to. If we wanted to have a bunch of OBGYN nurse pages, we could have that. If we wanted to have a bunch of surgery or a bunch of ENT or ophthalmology. And that way, when we're trying to craft a residency readiness program for anyone, we have the opportunity to give them real life situations within their specialty that they'll be working in. So that was, probably the biggest project I initially did within AI. Once I had kind of built this and we had started applying to things, I was then reached out, funny enough, by some colleagues within the solar sales world, which is where I had basically worked for 6 years, including within med school. And I was approached by some buddies that had heard some good things about me and that I was in medical school, and they wanted to start an AI scribe company. And so they came to me and said, "Hey, how do we do this? What do we do? And this was kind of in the intersectional period between finishing med school and starting residency. And I said, well, I don't think it'll be that hard. Let's try to craft it. And so for the last 10 months or so, I've also been part of a company called Scriber AI that is with, over 1,000 doctors across the country that will generate soap notes for them based on the conversations that they have with patients. And the more that I've been able to be involved with AI, the more I've kind of understood that there are really two major applications in which AI can really affect medicine. The first is in learning to communicate, right? Which is what I'm doing with my nurse bot. And the second is in allowing us to have the time to communicate, which is what I'm doing with Scriber, is freeing up physicians from the ability of having to write all of their notes and remember everything that they have with a patient. And it really, again, comes back to the key, which is that communication with our patients is what they deserve. And if we can improve as physicians in this, our patients' outcomes will be better. And more importantly, we'll enjoy medicine more.
Yeah, I love that you say that. So when the electronic medical record became a requirement by law almost, and paper notes were no longer allowed, doctors became like almost imprisoned by the keyboard, where they are burning out because for every 1 hour of patient visit that they have to do, they need 2 additional hours on the EMR to document what they spoke about with the patient, putting the note in, putting the orders in. It's such a burden that they came up with this term that I'm sure you have heard, that everyone knows about, called pajama time, where you see patients in an office setting for, say, 8 hours a day, and then you have another 16 hours in the evening that you have to try to squeeze in. That's not really possible to do, to document everything that happened during those 8 hours of clinic time. And it's humanly impossible to do it. So the doctor comes home, eats a dinner with their family like you do, but then they put their pajamas on and they basically are glued to the computer. And what you're describing is, if we can have this ambient listening system recorded in a progress note while the visit is happening, the doctor can go home and not have to be burdened by this. And so that would help with this problem of what they call burnout. Any thoughts on that, given that you're involved with the Scribe type company?
Yeah, so I think that everyone has a different opinion on what burnout is, right? And what causes it. I personally, I love medicine. I love being with patients. And I think that the minutia definitely has a huge role within burnout. What I'm hoping that this autonomous listening with AI can allow is for physicians to remember why they love medicine and for patients to be feeling that their doctor wants to sit there because they don't understand how much work we have to do outside of that visit.
Right. I want to echo that. I feel like all the things that you and I and our College of Artificial Intelligence are going to do together, essentially, what's going to happen, I hope, is that it's going to allow us to go back to the reason why we wanted to go into medicine in the first place, to be able to look at our patient face to face, make good eye contact, listen to their story, do our differential, diagnose them, treat them, and not just spend the whole time looking at a computer screen. And the thought is that AI in applications will take away the idea that we're just glued to the computer screen, that we can go back to building the doctor-patient relationship in a way That is the reason why we wanted to be physicians in the first place. So, but I want your opinion on this. Physicians that are doing what you're doing in the world of ambient listening systems, at least until now, have found that it isn't really sh saving time so much for the physician, because they have to obviously read the scribed EMR note carefully, look for any errors or hallucinations. And so when they go and look at actual minutes, they don't see that there's really significant time savings. And any thoughts on that piece?
Yeah, so I think that when, I see what is out there, and there are different scribe companies that do this. A lot of scribe companies are made by engineers that are not doctors. And when they write their note, it feels like AI's writing it. And the doctors I know have to go back and they have to correct things and change things, and it just doesn't feel like a doctor's note, regardless of the templates. So the first thing is that when the note isn't great, it doesn't matter that it collected information, you're not going to want to use it, and it's going to add time. The second is that the whole excuse of, well, I have to go back and I have to review the note and I have to see what it is. It's pretty easy to read a note very fast, and it's less time than actually writing it. And the biggest issue that we as physicians face is that we copy and paste notes. And we do this because of our lack of time. And then our insurance companies come in and they say, yeah, we're not gonna allow you to bill for this. Your note from the previous one is too similar. And it's because we don't have time to update every little thing that happens within every single visit, or to sit there and remember everything. So, yes, I do believe there's going to be some time in reviewing the notes to make sure that they're correct. But the fact that you have more information being put into these notes, relevant information, the fact that it's remembering the conversation you had when you saw 20 patients in a clinic or 15 patients in the hospital, is going to only result in not only better patient care, but in more billable notes that also ease the burden that we are experiencing.
I really agree with you. I think the quality of what gets documented and its impact on patient care is tremendous using artificial intelligence. We're going to talk about two things in the rest of the podcast. One is going to be something near and dear to what I do every single day, which is AI and resident education specifically. And then the second will be something that you're really involved with in our lab group, which is AI applications into oncology or cancer treatments. So let's start with the resident education piece. So for the last year and a half, I've been working on with the college and a lot of students and faculty nationwide, this whole idea of how AI is going to be part of this past fall's medical school entering class curriculum. And that has been an amazing journey with incredible people looking at the medical school. So much energy is being used in terms of AI for medical students, and I love it. And I love what you did creating your own application to teach medical students to practice like communication with nurses. But very little has been done, as far as I can tell, in resident education. And our organization is one of the first to do AI in resident education. Just prior to meeting with you, I did a PubMed literature search. There's fewer than 100 publications in the medical literature that have to do with AI and resident education. So it's a truly an uncharted territory. And our college has had a very robust resident education program where I personally go live to five residency programs every month in Chicago to teach AI topics within their lecture series. But you are currently an intern in a internal medicine residency program, and also someone extremely knowledgeable about artificial intelligence, and especially in education. What are your thoughts on what you see happening with AI in resident education? But more importantly, as a member of our college and as a colleague of mine now, what should happen moving forward with tools, specific tools that you think we should be using or teaching residents to use as part of resident education?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I use AI every day within residency. And it's really the biggest factor is probably open evidence. And everyone talks about open evidence, but what I've found is that most people don't actually know the applications of using something like that, right? So there's horizontal integration with AI and there's vertical integration with AI, right? And open evidence is a great example of vertical integration, where it takes, a large language model and it applies it to a database and gives it the proper prompts to make it useful. So I like open evidence because it's tied to up to date and the New England Journal. And so you know that the information it's getting is correct. So the way that I use it is I use it as a supplement for two things, for learning and this is very important, for preventing me from asking a dumb question to my attending. So all the time as residents, we want to learn and we want to have questions. And we all have that experience where we ask an attending something dumb and they're like, go look it up. The exact opposite of what you want to hear, because then it's like, well, I asked you. So what I'll do is I'll have a question in my mind about a patient and I'll type it in and then I'll read about it. And then it will give me the links to the articles. And I don't just stop there, I go to the articles. And then when I go to my attending, my response is, hey, there's this topic. I've gone and I've read about it. This is what I understand. These were the articles I read, but I'm still confused on this. And that allows me to speed up not only my learning process, but to make learning more meaningful. And so I explain this to med students and the other residents that it is a great bridge to making your time more efficient.
Great. I love that you say that. So when I went to these five different residency programs every month, I surveyed the residents about what they're using in terms of artificial intelligence in their day-to-day learning. I thought it was going to be ChatGPT, but in fact, the entire room of all these different residency programs said, raise their hand, so to speak, that they're all using open evidence. So you are not alone. As far as I can tell, all of my mentees currently in the Chicago area, which is quite a large number, are all using open evidence, not just at one hospital, but at all the hospitals I teach. So I want to echo your point about that being a very good tool, because it's not unlike ChatGPT, which is potentially covering the entire internet. This is a large language model that is specific to evidence-based medicine, which is really the driving force of what our organization is all about.
It's important, though, to understand within open evidence that it is ChatGPT. And I think people misunderstand this, right? All they've done is they've tied ChatGPT to a specific database. And I think that, when I hear people that are like, oh, I'm typing on ChatGPT 4.0, or I'm using, ChatGPT Strawberry, and they're asking it questions, you've got one large language model that's focusing on a small specific set of data, and a large language model that has 17 trillion points of data at reference. And so when it comes to AI and understanding the implications, I would be very concerned if someone was trying to get clinical knowledge from ChatGPT directly, versus, a prompted, isolated with an API thing like OpenEvidence,
Yeah.
because
No,
where you're pulling your information is so important.
you're right. Our college leadership echoes your point that we shouldn't be using just an unfocused version of the LLM. It should be something that's extracting the data from an evidence-based database trained on PubMed and other evidence-based medical literature. So I think that really rings true for everyone in internal medicine is on this notion that if we're going to do a treatment or know what the correct knowledge is in medicine, it should be trained on the data, the literature, not just on things that haven't been validated. So I like that you brought up that point. I would say your colleagues in the internal medicine residency world are all seemingly on board with what you're doing. But given how high level you are with this, residents all seem to know to use OpenEvidence. What would be some pearls that you could throw out of other tools that you know about, but the rest of the, what I would say, like at least for residents or even physicians,
Yeah.
general things, give us pearls of tools that you know about that are higher level that you would think maybe other doctors don't really know about. Give us some like wow factor of recommendations,
I don't know. I don't know about wow factor recommendations, but there are other tools out there that are developing and becoming better. Stanford recently released something called Storm AI. And so what Storm AI is it's an attempt by Stanford to create a program that can write literature reviews on topics that we pick. And it's still in the proceeds of kind of the early phase, but you can go on there and you can give it a topic and it'll write you a 7, 8, 9, 10, 12 page literature review on that topic, pulling in all different resources and trying to put it together. And I think that this could be an incredible tool as we go forward on producing more meaningful research, which is, I think, is so important within medicine. So while that kind of develops, I've used it within my own literature reviews to give me kind of a background of what is out there, right? What is being talked about and a deeper analysis of it. And I remember talking with another fellow in oncology, and I said, "Hey, give me a topic that you've recently written about." And she did, and I typed it in and it started producing. And she goes, "Where was this over the last 6 months that I was writing this paper?" But what was interesting is she had just published this, and all of a sudden she starts reading it and she goes, "Wait, this is what I wrote about." And we looked at the reference, and it was referencing her just barely recently published article that she had just done. So, AI is going to continue to help with education and with research, but it comes at a warning and a cost, right? And one of my very good friends over at Harvard, who publishes quite a bit in pain, will say to his colleagues, "If you're going to talk about AI, don't put it in AI. Don't have ChatGPT write your essay because I can tell immediately if it's AI written or not." So while we use these tools, I think we have to be careful about relying on them and using their language because the ethics are very clear on that, at least as far as my perspective, which is that I can't publish what AI writes. I need to publish what I can write, but I can use it to enhance my research. I can use it to enhance my writing. I can use it to help me with thought processes. So that's one that I think is a great resource.
So at the college, this is like at the forefront of what we're doing because we have over 25 lab groups, and you're part of one. You're kind of the lead for oncology. And in each one of those, we have teams of students, residents, and faculty publishing. And our main message in leadership is you have to write it. AI could be a tool to help you, but we do not want anything coming out of our organization that hasn't been written by the person writing it. So it's a tricky time in our world to sort out this whole idea of what was the work that you did versus did AI do the work, and how much is okay that AI wrote it, and how much is okay that you wrote it, and where does that line get crossed? It's such a complex notion. I like that your position is that you feel strongly that the individual should write it, because that's our position. And there have been papers that have been published and then retracted by really well-known journals because they determined that it was completely written by AI. So I don't want to dwell too much on this, but can just to close this topic, can you just
Yeah.
give a few more thoughts on, given this,
Research
like
and
given the tool like the Storm, which can write it better than we can, and yet our desire to not have plagiarism or not have things that are someone's claiming is their work that they didn't do themselves, like, what do you advise, at least at this moment in time, to your colleagues, to people in academia? How, given that there's no defined rule on this and medical schools don't even know for sure how to handle it, what is your best advice? How should we approach this?
yeah, so I think, going back to it, the ethics are clear that if you didn't write it, you shouldn't publish it, right? That's plagiarism. So what I always recommend when I'm working on a research project with people is I'm very strict on the fact that you can use AI to help, but you need to sit down and you need to be typing those words. And you can have it help you with grammar, you can have it help you with syntax, but it needs to be your words that you're typing. And so if you want to read a 3-page paper that Storm created for you on a topic on, what are the side effects of TKAs, go ahead. If that helps you with your thought process, that's fine. But you need to sit down and you need to put those words on the paper, and they need to be your words. Now, coming back to, within research, I want to take a second and just really focus on kind of what we're doing with the college and with oncology, which is how do we research within AI, right? What is the application of AI in medicine that really needs to be uncovered? And I want to, kind of touch on open evidence and come back to this, which is that it's not about the model. The model of AI that you're using is not what needs to be researched. What needs to be researched is how do we communicate and guide AI? How do we prompt AI? And I'm seeing that more and more people are starting to understand this concept that you can go to Grok and you can go to Gemini, and they're all very similar, right? But most people don't know how to talk with it. And as the models get better, we'll see that, and I use this word, childish, right? That AI will become less childish and need less instruction. But where it is right now, we have to give clear instruction of what exactly we want and guidelines to prevent it from hallucinating.
Right.
So,
I like where you're going with this. So the term, I mean, I think it's important for people listening to understand the terminology. So what you're describing is termed prompt engineering. And you and I and others who are very high level with this know that there's ways to frame or engineer the prompt to get a better output. And like, I'll give an example. If you just prompt a question like, give me a differential diagnosis for a patient who's coming in today with chest pain, or you say in the prompt engineering, if you're an academic cardiologist and you have a patient with chest pain, what are your thoughts on the? You'll get a dramatically different output just by changing the prompt in that way. So, but let's just any pearls from you to the audience on how to be more effective with the prompt engineering as a physician.
Yeah, so the biggest tip I always give people is that you have to look at it as if at this point that AI is like a child, right? You need to explain thought process. I liken it almost to and this is dumb, but I liken it almost to the movie Inception. If you remember watching that, they talked about how the idea that they had was that this man needed to split up his dad's company. He needed to destroy his dad's company because by doing so, it would allow other companies to come in and take over. And they say, well, that's too complex of a thought, right? You and I understand that, but his mind won't. And so they split it into three different points. And then they went into his mind and they crafted those three points that resulted in the question that they wanted, right? So when I tell people with AI with prompting, you need to be very systematic in what is your thought process, right? Instead of asking something like, what is the treatment for Hodgkin's lymphoma for a 65-year-old, right? And you want to know, what are the treatments and what are the goals and what are the plans or whatever. And in your mind, you could work out that pathway, but AI doesn't have a pathway yet. It's working on it and it's getting better, but you may have to say, you're an oncologist and I need you to give me a treatment based on an NCCN guidelines on Hodgkin's lymphoma. Then I need you to give me within those reasonings of why that treatment is going to be superior than others. And then I need you to give me what the trials are. And then I need you to give me what the outcomes for those trials were so I can reference that. And then I need you to now mention to me what backup plans I could have within that if it fails. And so by systematically separating out your question, you'll then get an answer that feels more of what we as physicians would be looking for as an answer.
I love the way you gave the example because that is the beautiful pearl of how to teach physicians to frame the question to prompt the large language model to get the best output. That was such a beautiful way of doing it. Thank you. I love that. Let's just finish on this topic of AI and oncology. So what has come out of AI is something called precision medicine. And the area that it's really applied to very well is in oncology, an area that you're interested in. And let's just talk about your thoughts on AI applications in oncology. I know you are quite knowledgeable about this. You have a lot of cool ideas about research projects you're going to do with our lab group. Let's just chat back and forth about
Yeah.
how you see AI in oncology. I'll give you my thoughts as and what's been done, but I'd like to hear your thoughts on what the future holds.
Yeah. So obviously to start this off with is I'm not an oncologist yet. And so my knowledge of oncology is amateur at best. But I'm working on it, and I really hope that I can, be an oncologist in the future. The way I see AI being helpful is in analysis of data. Now, everyone knows NCCN, and everyone knows it's also in the rankings for the worst website ever created by mankind. And that's because it's just PDF files for cancer diagnosis. It's really hard to search, And part of that is also it's being updated constantly. And then when you go to look for, treatment plans, it just gives you lists of medications, sometimes in the order of when they came out, sometimes alphabetical order. But because of how oncology is structured, if I have something like a renal cell carcinoma and I have, the standard of care for 20 years is this medication, all of the research going forward is going to be 10 different pharmaceuticals comparing their drug to that specific, standard of care. So then oncologists, they'll look at it and they'll see 10 different drugs. Well, how do they choose? Which drugs should they be choosing? Which drugs can they give? And so then it becomes a fight of what do we have on formulary? What does their insurance say? What will their insurance cover? What will their insurance not? Now I've got to look at it and say, oh, I can't give this medication, but I need to go to this medication I'm not familiar with. Now I need to go back and look at the data and compare it to the standard of care. So because oncology is the fastest changing specialty in medicine, oncologists are constantly, in my experience, overwhelmed with staying up to date on what they should do. And then there's almost this decision fatigue of which one do I choose? So I see oncology using AI as a way to help guide physicians in the three categories that I just talked about. Which medications are going to be financially covered? Which medications are going to have, based on their research and evidence, the most efficacy based on the patient's situation, right? And then the third, what do I do if everything else doesn't work? Where do I go from here? And if you're someone who specializes in, in general urinary cancers, of course you're as up to date as you can possibly be. And you're always going to be more beneficial to talk with than just going to NCCN. But there are hem-onc doctors in the middle of Wichita Falls, Texas, 2 hours away from any, level one trauma center. That how are they supposed to make all of these decisions without, colleagues that specialize? They have to go to the NCCN. So that's where I see it in. If it can help us with data analysis, I think that it would improve drastically the care for patients.
I agree, and that's a big part of what we're doing in the AI and Oncology Lab Group. And I like your example of how to go about that. So the part that I teach around isn't the treatment, though. Currently, there's over 1,000 FDA-approved algorithms for AI in medicine. 75% are in radiology. Much of that is in cancer detection. So where I see a huge opportunity to reduce mortality, aside from the treatment part, is early detection, meaning being able to visualize on an image a cancer a long time before a radiologist can visualize it. And then a lot of that has to do with seeing patterns at a pixel level that the human eye might not detect. And so some of the studies say in gastrointestinal cancers will show that by using these AI-enabled algorithms in radiology, you can often detect on the imaging a tumor that's a cancer over a year before it will be noticeable by a radiologist. And that early detection can take a cancer that is now treatable and resectable that would otherwise be too far gone when it's going to be noticeable as a mass on imaging. So, given that most of the energy and what's currently available for use is in detection and imaging, and any thoughts around the imaging aspect of AI and oncology?
Yeah, so I think that the application of using AI to detect early signs and put people in categories of high risk that need additional monitoring is going to be instrumental in how we move forward. I think that what's difficult sometimes is when studies show that early detection didn't help outcomes. And so I'm very interested in hopefully seeing, what will AI make the most impact in when it comes to the types of cancers, right? There might be certain types of cancers where even if you detect it early, there isn't a mortality benefit. But with others, maybe a resection is possible enough to stop it from further spreading. So I think there needs to be a lot more research within that, but I think it's exciting that we could change the way that we monitor.
Yeah, so really what we're talking about goes back to the theme of our national meeting, which is going to be September 19th and 20th in McCormick Place, Chicago, which is we need evidence-based medicine to look at both early detection as well as treatment when we're using artificial intelligence. And so what's lacking in all of these FDA-approved algorithms are randomized trials. The only division within medicine that has like numerous randomized trials currently is gastroenterology. They have over 50 randomized trials with AI and early detection during colonoscopy, but we really need that type of data for patient care in the realm of oncology. So I like your perspective on it. I support what you're saying. Let's just close with two things. One is give us just some pearls for our listeners on as an intern in internal medicine, what would be pearls on things to do for AI and medical care, like at your level? Like if you could advise and teach around AI and medicine to residents, what would be a couple of takeaway pearls that you haven't mentioned thus far?
Let's see. I would say, become familiar with how to speak to AI. Because as it becomes more and more integral, you don't want to be behind your other colleagues, right? Use AI for aspects of your day that shouldn't be something that you spend a ton of time on, right? I think that now, like OpenEvidence and even ChatGPT can help out with pre-authorization letters, doctor's notes. They can help out with, with kind of the minutia of writing, detailed descriptions, down for people. Use it for the aspect of any sort of, what's it called? It's the screening tools, right? Use it so that you don't forget the type of screening tools for each type of patient that you see, right? We have all of these tools that we use, like the Heart Score, GRACE, and TIMI, and we have, our Apache scores, and it's there's so much to remember. You can use it to help protect you from missing something that could potentially help you with your diagnosis and treatment. Our time is so limited in medicine, and we need to balance both, the administrative side with the patient care. And if you start to get familiar with AI early on, you'll be able to spend more time with your patients, which means better care for them. And that's why I'm here. There's nothing better than having the time to afternoon round on wards and be able to see my patients in the evening because all my work is done. That's my favorite part of the day.
I love that that's making you smile. I have the same feeling that you stated. It's like we are passionate about being physicians. We really care about our patients, and we want to find ways to use AI as a tool to enhance that and allow us to really go back to the core reasons why we wanted to become physicians in the first place. I want to close with one final thing, which is your relatively new to being a member of the college. What's your experience like as a resident member of the college? We're a not-for-profit organization. We don't charge students or residents anything. We're here just to teach and mentor. What's that been like for you in the last few months, having joined our organization?
No, I think that the organization is really structured on being useful and helping doctors bridge this very big transition point. When EMRs were launched in the 2000s, it took the government forcing everyone to switch to electronic medical records before we adopted it. So a lot of doctors were very much behind, and that can cause complications with patient care. To me, the whole aspect of the College of AI and Medicine is to not allow the mistakes of the past, which is finding a way to bridge the way we used to do things with the technology that's coming out so that patient care doesn't fall behind within this transition. And so that's what I've been very impressed with both the research and the intent and the desire to make us all better physicians.
Great. Any closing message to our listeners today?
Start as soon as you can on figuring out how to use these tools because it's only going to get better. And I'm excited for the future. I really am.
As I am as well, and it's been a pleasure having you on the podcast, Connor. Wish you very well in your career here as both a resident physician and then as an oncologist. And I'm excited to work with you in the years to come, helping you achieve those goals and using AI for good. So, if those listening, if you like what you heard today, consider joining our organization. You could go to www.americancollegeaim.org. Consider coming to our national meeting in Chicago, McCormick Place, September 19th and 20th. On April 1st, we'll have a platform through Four Waves where you can submit your abstracts. Our call for abstracts and research will be April 1 to July 1, and we hope that Connor and others at Creighton and all the academic centers will consider submitting their abstracts for presentation at our conference. We will have an abstract competition with winners at the faculty level, the fellow level, the resident level, and the medical student level. And we're hoping that you consider coming and attending live the 2-day evidence-based medicine sessions with world-renowned professors of medicine who are experts on artificial intelligence. Also, keep in mind we're not for profit, and we do, aside from having a join button on our website and a registration button for the conference, we do encourage you to consider donating to our not-for-profit organization to support the work that Connor and I and the hundreds of other physicians and computer scientists and leaders in medicine are working on all across the nation as well as worldwide at the intersection of AI and medicine. Thanks for listening and hope to see you guys again on the podcast. Thanks, Connor.
If you enjoyed what you heard here today, consider becoming a member of our professional society by going to www.americancollegeaim.org and click join. Also, don't forget to save the dates. September 19th and 20th, 2025, we'll be having our first ever scientific session at McCormick Place right here in Chicago. Go to our website to register to attend the conference. We hope to see you all live in Chicago, and we look forward to having you tune in to our next podcast on Melvin Monday here on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube.